Today on Maine Calling, confusion over tipping. Do you feel as though you are asked or prompted to give a tip more often than before? You're not alone. A recent Pew Research study showed that 72% of Americans feel tipping is expected in more places than just 5 years ago. It's confusing and potentially expensive. Have the rules changed? How to know when and how much to tip? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, tipping culture, or as some are calling it, tipflation. We'll talk with the author of that Pew Research survey about what they found. Also joining us, a consumer behavior expert who says we're being manipulated. And we'll hear from etiquette expert Elaine Swan. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Tipping is not what it used to be, and people are often confused about when to tip and how much. Sometimes we even feel guilty about the amount we tip or don't tip. Today, we're going to talk about the new tipping culture and how we got here. Joining me, Max Alberhasky, who is Assistant Professor of Marketing at California State University in Long Beach, and Drew DeSilver, a senior writer with the Pew Research Center. He co-authored a recent study on tipping. Our other panelist, Elaine Swan, is an etiquette expert and founder of the Swan School of Protocol. Elaine had a conflict come up. She couldn't join us live, so we recorded a conversation, and we will share her thoughts throughout today's program. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you been perplexed about when and where and how to tip? How about when you're paying with a credit card at a counter and you're prompted to give a tip at a place where you didn't used to? Give us a shout, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. And Drew, Max, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Jen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Excited to talk.
We're going to start by listening to a little part of my conversation with Elaine Swan about tipping culture today. Elaine, it seems that for a long time, there were some generally agreed upon etiquette rules about who to tip and how much. And there was some comfort in that. But now it seems way more confusing. Do you think that the rules around tipping are shifting?
I believe the rules around tipping are trying to shift in terms of where folks are told they are supposed to tip. And much of that is not true. I think tipping culture has changed quite a bit, most especially after the pandemic. And so it is my desire to really help people hone in on the actual guidelines and rules for tipping in today's society.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, if you think the pandemic changed things.
I do. I believe the pandemic had changed things, because what happened is we recognized that folks in the service industry were really the ones doing the heavy lifting during that time frame. And so folks were at home, and they recognized that people were really literally risking their lives, whether it was for delivery, for food, or home goods or what have you. And so naturally, individuals tipped in unexpected areas. They tipped more than they normally would. And I think that was good for that particular time. I think that was the benevolent thing to do. Well, now that we're outside of the pandemic and kind of back in the real world, this is where I think it's important for us to recognize when to tip, how much to tip, and who to tip.
All right, out of the pandemic and back into the real world. Drew, I'll start with you. Pew is well known for its surveys on topics such as politics, the economy, and religion. Why did Pew this time choose to focus on tipping? Was it, as Elaine talked about, because things are changing post-pandemic?
Well, we all had my team. If we're a smaller team within the Pew Research Center, we sort of focus on interesting things that aren't and don't involve politics and heavy issues and such like that. And we were gathered around the table last year, and we all had sort of this general sense that, yeah, it feels like tipping is changing, but is it really? Is it just us? Do people out there in the real world feel that way? And we did some looking around. We found that no one had actually done a broad-based survey on tipping attitudes and tipping behavior in the way that we wanted to do it. And so we thought, well, we're equipped to do that sort of thing. So let's take a look at it. And we do want to find out what's going on in people's lives and how people feel about societal changes. So this fit in with our larger mission, but we also thought that it would be something that would be really interesting to a lot of people.
Yeah, and I want to have you talk about some of the detailed findings you had, but how about some of the big picture ones? Do people indeed feel as though they're being asked to tip more often? And do people feel confused?
Well, yes and yes. In your introduction, you said that people feel confused about tipping. And if you do, you're not alone. We asked how confident people feel about when to tip and whether to tip and how much to tip. And only about a third of people said that they felt extremely or very easy, that it was extremely or very easy to know when to tip or how much to tip. But at the same time, more than 70% of people said that they're being asked to tip a lot more than they were 5 years ago. So we have this sort of mix between I'm being asked to do it more, but I'm not sure how to do it.
Max, you study consumer psychology, so I'm guessing that the practice of tipping is really where the rubber hits the road, because so much psychology is happening at that moment, say at a coffee shop counter when the customer decides about a tip. You've got guilt, social pressure, even one's view of the world.
Yeah, absolutely, Jennifer. And so we've all heard the term inflation talked about a lot in the past few years. And now we have a new term that's introduced called tipflation. And so it's this idea that we're being asked to tip more often in scenarios that we weren't asked to provide tips for in the past. And then also we're being asked to tip more. I feel like the scales tipped from 15% was the norm in bars, coffee shops, restaurants, and then the pandemic shifted it to around 20%, and it sort of stayed there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Drew.
I pick up on what Max was saying, we're also being asked to tip in different ways than we used to be. Back in the day, if you were in a restaurant, the waiter would, or the server, I should say, would come over, leave you the check, and then walk away or bring you back your credit card, and then you would write down the tip and you would leave. Now, a lot of places where you go, the server will hand you a little tablet and sort of stand there while you decide whether to tip and how much to tip. And that creates a whole lot of different kinds of pressure on the consumer, I suspect, than was present before. So that changes the dynamic.
And Max, you wrote about this in a column for Psychology Today. Is there some psychology going on?
Absolutely. Yeah, in this article, I talked about three things. One is more old school. It's called seating the tip jar. And so if you ever go to a bar or a restaurant or a coffee shop, you'll see a physical tip jar, usually has cash in it. And something everyone knows is that it's best to put a few dollars from the till into the tip jar, because this provides what's called social proof, meaning social information that when you get up to the counter yourself, you realize that other people have put money in the tip jar. And so you should also contribute money to the tip jar. When I was a PhD student, there was a tip jar in the coffee shop at the business school. And I was usually the first one there in the morning. And there would always be a few dollar bills, even though I was the first customer. And so this is one lever I've seen, but more to Drew's point, now we've moved more towards these tablets or iPads that you see at bars and coffee shops or restaurants. And so this leads to what's called social desirability, in consumer psychology, the idea that we want to appear like good, moral, generous people to those around us. And so we tend to leave a tip at the iPad, especially when the waiter or bartender is watching us as we insert our credit card and check a number on that tablet. And then another feature of these tablets is that they allow for the opportunity to do what's called nudge in consumer research. And so maybe you've seen tablets that say they have three squares, 10%, 15%, 20%. Businesses have learned that if you shift those numbers up to, let's say, 15%, 20%, 25% as the default, this leads to more tipping because consumers generally pick the middle option. And even if they can press custom tip, they usually don't. They're kind of in a hurry. They want to get their cup of coffee and get on the road.
Fascinating. Elaine Swann and I talked about this. We were talking about how, in her view, the rules have not changed for traditional sit-down restaurants, that a 15% tip remains acceptable, and that can rise to 20% for excellent service. But I asked her about food that is served to you in other kinds of establishments.
If you are sitting when you are being served your meal, then a tip is required. If you are standing when you are served your meal, a tip is not required. That's it. So the reason why I say this is because, especially here in the United States, tipping restaurant servers is part of the standard of these individuals receiving their basic pay. This is how these folks are paid. They don't receive a standard salary. Their salary is the tip. Now, when you're looking at folks who are standing behind a counter and serving you, they are earning an hourly wage. So the tip would be above and beyond the service that you're receiving. So you're not required to tip in that instance. It's welcome if the service is excellent, above average. Let's say, for example, you have a large order, or, you know, the server just really went above and beyond for you that day. They are a regular, you're a regular there, and they remember your order, just something where they go above and beyond, then that's when a tip is acceptable. But I want folks to know that it is not required.
What would you say about people feeling guilty about not tipping in those situations or not tipping enough?
My recommendation is to push past that societal pressure and hit that big giant no tip red button, pay for your service and keep it stepping. And here's what's happening in this instance. You have two things that are happening when you have in this particular instance here. Number one, the proprietor of the restaurant is offering their employees a perk. And the perk is, I'm gonna pay you your average salary and you get to earn tips. But they're putting that perk on the back of the consumers, on the backs of consumers. The second thing that's happening is that electronic device that's being used to calculate the service and the tip and so on and so forth, there's a service fee that's involved. And the company behind that receives more money based upon the amount of the service. So that organization is winning because the ticket in that particular instance is higher. So the company, the proprietor, is winning because they can provide this perk. The service company is winning because they're charging a higher fee. And it's all going on the backs of the consumers. And so that's why I say, stand there flat-footed, confident, and recognize that I do not have to tip in this instance. It's not required. I will do so if I feel as though the service warrants it.
Max, consumer behavior and how consumers are affected by larger forces.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll piggyback on that with a personal anecdote from my life. And so a few years ago, I went to a University of Texas Longhorns football game. And at the game, I went out during halftime and I bought a beer. And so, this is like a $14 stadium beer. And it's just a can of beer where the person handed it to me, maybe cracked it open. And then, I paid $14. And of course, there was an option to tip. And in this case, I followed Elaine's advice and I pressed the big red do not tip button. And the woman was watching me and she actually said something. She said, "Really, you're not going to leave a tip?" And I was shocked in this case. No one has ever confronted me for something like that. And I didn't know what the etiquette was because it's not a ton of work. Like Elaine said, I was on my feet ordering this beer. And so I was kind of taken back by this. And you don't know exactly what these people are being paid or how their incentive structure works. And so I just wanted to share that story as some funny example from my own life.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, we that was one of the things that we were really interested in when we did our survey was when do people tip? When do people feel like that they ought to tip? Or when? And so we asked people in a bunch of different situations, would you be likely to leave a tip? And restaurants, almost everybody will leave a tip in a restaurant. I kind of want to know about those people who don't, but most people will. But in a sit-down restaurant, but in a like a fast casual restaurant, like a Panera or something, very few people will leave a tip. And I was surprised in a coffee shop because I don't drink coffee myself. I'm not part of coffee culture, but my presumption from what I had seen was that, oh, baristas get tipped all the time, and there's the tip jar, like what Max was saying. But when we found like only a quarter of people tip in coffee shops, and maybe that has to do with the standing versus sitting dynamic that your other guest was talking about.
Well, one thing I found interesting, and there's so much that's interesting in your study, Drew, but one of it is that it doesn't seem as though when we're talking about Democrats and Republicans, one group tips and one group doesn't tip, but the reasons are different. What did you find?
It was interesting. Overwhelmingly, we asked why what factors influence people's decision to tip and their decision about how much to tip. And we gave people four choices or four options, and overwhelmingly, service. The quality of service was the overwhelming choice of three quarters of people, and it varied a little bit by demographics and by politics, but not by much. The other factors we saw was that some the people who are younger tend to they're more likely to cite how much the server makes as a factor, but that's still way behind service. People who make more money, liberal Democrats are more likely to than other groups to think of how much the server makes in deciding whether to tip and how much to tip them. But again, it's so far behind service that I think it was only about a quarter of people in those groups, maybe a third. But it was it really kind of goes back to one of the other things that we found was about whether tipping is considered a choice or whether it's considered an obligation. And most people feel like tipping, I take that back, and plurality of people say that tipping is a choice rather than than a social obligation. But the biggest group of people, almost half, said, well, it depends on the circumstance. And so we were like, well, that doesn't help. Which circumstances are we talking about? Is it an obligation and a choice? And that's why we tried to dig in a little bit deeper about where people tip or not.
Okay. Yeah, that was what I was interested in, this difference between many Republicans saying, service is number one, but a lot of Democrats saying, well, I think about how little these people make and I want to, chip in. So I think that that's a really, but it's still pretty close. It's not a great big distinction. It looks like.
It really isn't. It's one of the few things that unites Americans across the political divide and across every other social divide we have.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about tipping. And if you've been hearing these clips from Michelle Swan, this is part of an interview I did with her on Friday. And if you'd like to listen to the entire interview with Elaine Swan from the Swan School of Protocol, you can find that on our website, mainecalling.org. If you'd like to take part in this conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about how American tipping culture has changed since the pandemic and when tipping is warranted or expected. With me, Drew DeSilva, who's a senior writer with the Pew Research Center and co-author of a recent study on tipping. Max Alberhasky is an assistant professor of marketing with Cal State University in Long Beach. He studies consumer behavior. And Elaine Swan is an etiquette expert with the Swan School of Protocol. She was not able to be here with us live at the last minute, so we recorded a conversation, and you'll hear clips of that throughout the program. Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So I'm just going to read a couple emails here. Scott says, simple. If I'm in a sit-down restaurant, I tip. Usually 20% unless the service was terrible. If I'm picking up takeout, I don't tip. An email from Paul. I always tip 20 to 25% at a sit-down restaurant. I avoid local establishments where tipping is expected. And Drew, your study showed that people do not like it when the tip is added to the bill.
They do not. That is one of the other things that unites us across all groups, is people really, really, really do not like automatic service charges. And I'm not sure how prevalent it is outside of large cities that restaurants do those. But one thing that I think it's important to note is that a service charge and a tip are not the same things. A service charge is imposed by the restaurant, and you have to pay it. And there is no rule that says the money from a service charge has to go to the actual workers. It may or it may not. Tips are voluntary under the law, but the restaurant owner or the business or whatever cannot keep that money. A manager can't keep tips. They have to be distributed to actual workers.
We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey there. How are you all today?
Great.
Yeah, I have a bit of a comment. I live in Portland, and there's a place that I went to pick up some takeout, which is, you know, great. We do that quite often, you know, support as many local restaurants as we can. But when the person at the host stand flipped over the pad for me to pay, it was automatically defaulted to a 25% tip on a $25 or $30 order. And I went to pick up takeout, and I did been there twice, and I pointed it out to this person, said, you know, your pad is set to a 25% default on tip. And they said, oh, that's not bad. I said, well, you might want to change that, because people who are not exactly tech savvy might just hit yes and sign it and be paying a 25% tip on something that I called, drove to pick up. And it's not that I'm anti-tipping, but I think it's out of control with the amount people are expected to just put something on a counter for me and, oh, by the way, tip me.
So, Max, was that an accident?
Not an accident. I'm not sure about that story, but it seems to me that the sky is kind of the limit, and businesses are trying to press a little bit and see how far they can go without being blatantly called out, as the caller, I would say in this case, rightly did with the establishment, because people are inherently lazy. We like default choices. Some of the original research on this concept of nudge finds that there's vast levels of different organ donations in countries based on what the default is. So in the United States, if you don't check anything or don't fill out any forms, you're assumed not to be an organ donor. But there's actually some countries in Europe where if you do nothing, you're assumed to be an organ donor. And even though this is an important decision, sometimes people get confused, they're lazy, it's a complicated form. And so people just don't make any choice. And then what happens when you sort of go with the default really is what's being transferred into these tablet/iPad tipping scenarios. And so you're asked or presented with a set of options. And most people are in a hurry or busy or it's an ambiguous situation where you don't know exactly what most people do, or you don't know exactly how much money the person behind the counter is earning, how much they rely on tips. And so you use that default for information to try and make an informed decision in this somewhat abstract sort of scenario.
I'm wondering, and I'm going to ask you this, Chris, because you called, and I know that you said you go out to eat a lot and you like to support local restaurants. Do you think this could change your behavior, though? Do you think that if you're being asked to tip and tip a lot over and over again, you might stop going to restaurants as often?
Well, this particular place, which I'm not going to call out because it's unfair to them, I'm not going to be going back anytime soon because I've pointed it out more than once. And it bothers me more that people who aren't quite as savvy with these things are getting sucked into the void and, you know, are paying, overpaying. But to the point where, you know, go to coffee shops or things like that, sure, I'll leave a tip, but I don't go to the default, you know, 30-25%. If you give me a $4 cup of coffee, I'm not going to tip you 25% or 30% on that. I'll give you, you know, a dollar or something because I understand that, you know, part of a wage package is in fact a tip structure. But the expectation that, you know, you deserve a tip just because you're doing your job is false. I think, you know, and I'm going out on a limb here, but I think this is also part of the, oh, you know, you're on the team, so you get a participation trophy. I mean, you don't get a participation trophy in the terms of a tip just for showing up and doing your job.
Chris, thanks so much for your thoughtful call. And Drew, I'm wondering what you think. I know you didn't ask, are you less likely to go to an establishment? But from all the research you've done, can you see that maybe down the road, this could backfire for businesses?
Well, I can't predict the future. I wish I could, but it really is interesting to hear that kind of backlash, because I've heard it before when I've been talking about this research, that people and it jives with what we hear, that people aren't keen. We talked about how people really don't like automatic service charges, but we also asked people, you know, do you even like, how do you feel about just these suggested tip amounts? Because that's a relatively new phenomenon too. Back in the day, you know, when you got the restaurant bill, you had to calculate the tip yourself. And I'm old enough to remember when calculators had little tip buttons you could use to easily do that. So we asked people, you know, how do you feel about businesses suggesting tip amounts? Because we thought, well, maybe that could be considered pushy. But people were pretty split on that. More people don't like them than like them, but it's not overwhelming. And a fair chunk of people don't feel really about them one way or the other.
Max.
Yeah, and I have seen some pushback on this. They're not very many, but a few restaurants in the U.S., one of the most famous examples I've seen in the news is the creators of the television series South Park bought a restaurant in Colorado.
Yeah.
They renovated it, and they have a big sign on the restaurant. It's called Casa Bonita, and they say, we pay all of our waiters $30 an hour. We pay them this living wage, and so you don't have to tip. You actually cannot tip, and that's their policy.
Wow. Yeah, interesting you brought that up. And Chris Cass, thank you so much for calling in. I want to go, I'm going to read an email that's related to that, Max. Oh boy, we have so many emails. Let me see if I can find it now. This is from Hospitality Maine. Tipping plays a key role in Maine's sit-down restaurant industry, allowing servers to earn a significant portion of their income. Both earlier this year and 2 years ago, Portland voters showed strong support for the tipping system, recognizing its importance for both servers and restaurateurs. And Max, I know you're here from California, but the whole idea of paying a living wage to restaurant workers is sort of kind of a hot idea in some circles, but has repeatedly been voted down here in Maine. Go ahead, Drew.
It was, I'm in Washington, D.C., and it was a hugely controversial thing here in the district, too. There was an attempt by the city council to raise minimum wages for tip workers, and with the idea that that would eliminate tipping, and it split the server community within the city, because a large number of people wanted to have the guaranteed higher minimum wage, but also a significant number of servers said, no, we want to have the opportunity to earn more on tips, because we could earn more on tips than we could on the minimum wage. So it was, I forget how it ended up, but referendum a couple of times, and the city council passed it, and then they repealed it, and then they passed it again. It lasted for years, this debate.
I want to just very quickly talk, since we were not able to have Elaine live on the program, some of the other tips that Elaine Swan gave us during our interview. She recommends for hotel staff, for the folks who clean your room, $3 to $5 per night. She said she also tries to find out if it's the same person every night or not, so that the person who actually cleans the room on a multi-night stay gets that tip. She says, remember, holidays are coming up. People who help you throughout the year, people who provide a service for you throughout the year, tip them and make sure they know that that's separate. Put it in a separate envelope or mail it to them. If you have somebody, a professional person coming to your house, a plumber, an electrician, somebody like that, she says no need to tip. She says yes to a driver who's delivering a piece of furniture or appliance or something like that. And she says no, the person who jumps your battery from AAA, AAA doesn't recommend that because they don't want their drivers vulnerable carrying lots of cash. So there's just a run through of some of the tips she gives in the interview that you can find on our website. We'll go to Claire, who's calling from Lubeck. Hi, Claire, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I love this discussion because I work in a coffee shop and my husband is a mechanic. And so there's tipping that goes on in both realms. And I stand behind the counter. I make the drink. There's also food served. People sit down. We bring it to them. So it's all of these things that we're discussing wrapped into one. And I love for tips. I get less of a wage, although my boss is very good. And she always makes sure that my wage is like, we use the Clover system. So it's like, if I'm not making a living wage, you make sure I am paid it. If the tips don't rise to that, like the top there. But
yeah,
at the mechanic shop where my husband works, sometimes people will tip them, like for good work, for getting people in. I just feel like we can't really be right or left on this, like Republicans or Democrats. It's like if your heart feels like you need to give a tip to the person who is working on your car or making your food, or like, you know, we're all here right now to take care of each other, right?
Yeah, and you know, Claire, that is something that our etiquette expert Elaine Swan said. She says that it's always okay to tip. You know, it's never not okay. Like your husband with the mechanic, and what we're talking about is a lot of the confusion because, people really don't know when they walk in the door that you're how good the boss is, whether the boss is offering a living wage or putting it on the consumer to make sure their employees get a living wage.
Well, in Washington County, we're like one of the lowest living wage counties in Maine, right? So I am very blessed, as is my husband, to have really great bosses, you know, who work across party lines to take care of the people that work for them, you know? And
yeah,
it's just been, right now, it just seems most important to like just take care of each other. And if someone seems like they, you know, follow your heart, tip with your heart.
And I'm going to tie this, Max, to the conversation Max was having about the big football game and the person who handed him a beer, you know. In Claire's case, she's working at a small coffee shop, and I know Lubeck is a small town, and probably, you know, most people who walk in the door. But Max, probably that stadium is run by a big corporation that has been contracted from the University of Texas, and it's a whole different ball game there. So that's one of the many things that somebody might be thinking about when they're deciding whether or not to tip. And boy, that's a lot to think about when you're just getting a beer or a cup of coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. If it's more of your mom and pop shop, like a local coffee shop, it feels more natural to provide a tip, because you can see the direct impact you're having. If it's a big corporation like Starbucks or Panera Bread, kind of like the other guest was talking about, then it feels like there's a little more uncertainty with where your tip will go. Is it pooled? Does it go to the manager who then redistributes it? But if it's, you know, a local coffee shop or a local business, it feels like the direct impact of your dollars are going straight to the frontline facing person who you're having an interaction with, which should feel good for consumers.
I have an email here for, and Claire, thank you so much for calling in. I have an email here from Pia. Tipping is meant to thank and acknowledge service. If we as a culture that allows the most wealthy people to build their wealth at the expense of the lower compensated earners in our workforce, isn't it unsurprising that the individual becomes the source of compensation? Our cost of living is higher. Our working class is growing. Let's pan out and look at why we are being asked to tip workers in ways that we aren't accustomed to. And that really is part of the broader picture here, isn't it, Max? That this is a societal, this little question of whether or not to tip somebody at a coffee shop really reflects larger trends in what's going on in our society and who pays who and how we make a living.
Yeah, exactly. And restaurant owners, coffee shop owners, bar owners, they love tipping because it's an example of what's called incentive alignment. And so basically the manager or boss might not always see who is performing very well on the front lines of their business, but the customer sees. And so the customer's money speaks in a sense. If they feel that they've gotten tremendous or outstanding service, then the person who has served them will reap the rewards in theory via getting a higher tip or more gratuity from that person. And so that's a really nice case of incentive alignment. And you could make the case that service is probably better when tipping is involved than, say, paying $30 an hour minimum wage like the restaurant in Colorado does. And so that's something that businesses like. And then something people often don't think about is that if you have tipping, you can actually charge lower prices on your food, because if you are a restaurant that's charging $30 or paying $30 an hour rather to your employees, you can't just eat the cost of that. You have to raise prices on the menu that then gets distributed to waiters. And so another reason businesses love tipping above and beyond that it matches service quality to compensation is because they can charge lower prices on their menus. And so that's something they appreciate.
Well, we do have to take another quick break. We're talking about tipping on Main Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Main Calling. Our topic today, the evolution of tipping and whether the current tipping culture is here to stay. Joining me, Max Alberhasky with Cal State University in Long Beach. He researches consumer behavior. And Drew DeSilver with the Pew Research Center. Pew did a recent study on tipping. Also, we've been hearing from time to time from Elaine Swan with the Swan School of Protocol. We pre-recorded Elaine's comments. You can join our conversation, though I think our board is full, 1-800-399-3566, or find us on social media. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. So one thing we really haven't talked about much right yet, but I think is an important part of this conversation, that it is tradition to tip in cash, but many people don't carry cash anymore. We asked Elaine Swan what she thinks of tipping using a QR code or Venmo.
I think with the new forms of tipping electronically, I think it's a great idea. The folks who are receiving the tip, they can certainly appreciate it. And I'm sure they'll share with you that they tend to be tipped more often because it can be transferred electronically. Of course, cash is always great, but with the new forms of electronic transfer of money, I think it's a great asset for us to have.
All right. So Elaine Swan on the new kinds of tipping. We'll go to Joe calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me. I was calling today. I haven't heard much. I've heard a lot about restaurants and coffee shops, but nothing really about gig workers, which is kind of a newer kind of work, like Instacart shoppers and Lyft drivers. I've done both, and I'm currently an Instacart shopper, and I feel like even the people who use the app to get their shopping done may not totally understand how it works for us on the other end. We do receive orders, which we can then accept, but interestingly, we see the tip up front before we decide to accept an order. And I'm not sure people are aware that Instacart pays us very little. There's zero wage. There's no salary. But we do get a small fee from Instacart for an order that we take. But I would say 80% of my earnings are tip.
Wow. Good so information. I'm going to go to Drew DeSilver.
Important. Pardon?
Yeah, I was just going to go to Drew DeSilver from Pew. Go ahead, Drew.
Oh, that's okay. We were really interested in that. And that idea too is, some of the newer kinds of jobs that your guest was talking about, how much do people, how willing are people to tip on those jobs? So we did ask, specifically about food delivery. If you order some food, DoorDash or Uber Eats or whatever, will you tip the person who delivers your food? And it was, I guess, somewhat heartening to find out that 3/4 of people said that they would always or often tip in that situation. And same with a taxi or a rideshare service. We found that about 6 in 10 people would almost would often or always tip in that situation.
Thanks for your call, Joe. I'm going to go up to Thomaston and Eric. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Thanks for covering this topic today. I'm a chef in Thomaston, and many of us in the industry, we know the history of tipping was actually established when slavery was abolished. The railway system didn't want to pay wages, so they passed that on to the patrons. So at its root, it is a classist system that, adds to income disparity, and it also limits the wages of the cooks, I'd like to mention as well. It's sort of a psychology experiment, and I think it's time that the consumer acknowledges the policies of our government and the subsidies that determine the prices of goods, and acknowledge that when you pay for a premium service, the actual price of those premium goods and services, because they're not supported by subsidies. So just a couple of points I wanted to mention. Thanks again for covering this.
Yeah, and Eric, I think part of what's so interesting about this is individuals are making this decision as they pay for a meal or pay for a coffee or get out of a ride share, because they may feel uncomfortable with the system, but they're a human being dealing with another human being, and they want to do the right thing. I'm going to tune to you, Drew, about something else Eric said, and that's about cooks in restaurants, because we know that some restaurants, and I think this is increasingly so, I waited tables, but quite a few years ago, many servers are now expected to share their tips with cooks and other staff, dishwashers in restaurants, and you asked about this practice.
We did. We asked what people thought the fairest way to distribute tips would be in a situation like that. And again, overwhelmingly, almost 3/4 of people said that each server should keep all the money that they are themselves are given in tips. And only about 1/4 of people favored any kind of a tip pooling arrangement. Now, of course, as Max, I'm sure, knows, tip pools are not uncommon in the restaurant business, and part of it is for that very reason, because the theory is that the people you don't see, the cooks, the dishwashers, the bartender that's mixing the drinks, whoever, the people who clear the table, you don't see them, you don't give them tips necessarily, but they contribute to the whole service experience, and so the idea is that they should share in the tips. Now, I know that there are fairly stringent rules that the government has about how tip pools are allowed to operate, because they don't want managers pocketing the tips. So and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to tell you what those rules are, but you can't, if you do want to do a tip pool, you have to abide by those restrictions. And Max might know more about that.
Max, we're talking about cost shifting, aren't we?
Yeah, a little bit. And I want to return actually to something you mentioned at the beginning that Elaine brought up about this digital tipping versus cash. And something that plays into this term of tipflation is a lot of tipping is done digital now, mostly digital. And there's a concept in consumer psychology called pain of payment. It's the idea of how painful is it to part with this money of mine? And pain of payment is highest for cash. And so you see the cash actually leaving your wallet, getting handed over. And so pain of payment tends to be highest for cash as a payment method. But for digital or credit card payments, pain of payment is significantly lower. And so when you're asked to tip digitally or via credit card, it doesn't feel as painful. And so consumers are more generous with their tips when it is this technology or credit card based method versus the more traditional cash that used to be king 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, the more frictionless experience.
That's right, frictionless. And Eric, thank you so much for calling in and contributing to the conversation. I want to say right off the bat right here that we have so many calls and emails coming in. There's no way we're going to get to many of them in the couple minutes we have left, but we'll try to get to a few. We'll go to Lauren calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Lauren. Go ahead.
Hi there. Actually, it's interesting that you talk about the cash versus credit issue. I spent a little while in my earlier years working weekends as a cabbie and found that when I was out working, picking up fares on the street, you know, just people hailing a cab in a city environment, I averaged about a 40% tip rate because it was, you know, a $12 fare, people hand me a 20 and jump out of the cab. Whereas once the Uber and other online methods came into play, the cab companies matched that and also had, you know, online prepay apps. And suddenly my tips dropped to 10% or 15% or whatever radio button the person chose to select. And it seriously cut into what I could earn.
Interesting. Yeah. So sort of the opposite of the frictionless concept that Max is talking about. Thanks so much for calling in about that, Lauren. I'm going to go here to an email from Michael. He writes, my son barbacked and bartended in Boston while in grad school, and he encouraged good tipping. Because of that, since retiring, I've gotten into the habit of tipping 25%, regardless of the quality of food or server. I figure they're doing the best they can. They are generally in a lower paid job, and it is a way to share what wealth I have in an effort to help in a small way to correct the gross inequities of our economy. And I think this is sort of the subtext of everything we've been talking about today, whether it's Max talking about consumer behavior or Drew, you talking about your survey, is that people are uncomfortable with the larger picture here. They're uncomfortable with the economy, the way the economy works, and why they're being asked to tip. But on a personal level, they still do give that tip. Drew.
I think so. I think that is really a lot of what people are thinking about is when we talk about, you know, is it a choice? Am I trying to reward good service? And then conversely, I can not reward bad service. Or do I have an obligation to somehow, make up for the money that the server is not getting from their employer? And how do I feel about that? And that's what we found is that there really are different people do feel differently about that. Younger people and more educated people tend to lean more toward the it's my obligation to take into account how much people make when I decide to tip. And older folks and lower income folks were more likely to say, nope, it's all about service. And that's all it is.
Yeah, we have just about 30 seconds left. I'll try to squeeze in Kayla from Gardner. Hi, Kayla. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I was calling about, as a former server, it doesn't matter what the law is. Check and see whether people are really going to get their tips. If they're going to get it in non-cash version, they may prefer to get it in cash. The other thing is the tips are contract between you and the worker. And if you're a repeat, if you're a regular, if you tip well, you're going to get the specials. You're going to get, you know, a little extra coffee and things like that. So if you have a place you go regularly, you should tip really well.
Well, great last words from Kayla calling from Gardner. And I want to thank our guest today for such an interesting conversation. Drew DeSilver, a senior writer at the Pew Research Center, a big study late last year about tipping and tipping confusion. And Max Alberhasky, an assistant professor of marketing with Cal State University in Long Beach. And Max studies consumer behavior, which I can only imagine is endlessly fascinating. We also heard from Elaine Swan, who's an etiquette expert. She's the founder of the Swan School of Protocol. You can find that interview on our website, maincalling.org, and pretty soon we'll have a transcript too. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a conversation with writer and Bowdoin business professor Anthony Walton about his latest book on racial justice and equality in America. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.